Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
We are back. Thank you for listening. 888-914-9149 is the number. 888-914-9149 is the number. And I want you to listen to a little bit of audio. The first audio I have for you, and this, by the way, is courtesy of Christopher Rufo. He's affiliated with Hillsdale College. He's on Twitter as Real Chris Rufo. This is some audio. We're going to hear two audios that pertain to Disney. This first one is from, I don't know how many presidents they have at Disney, but her name is Carrie Burke, and she's listed here in the tweet as a corporate president. And she's speaking on a Zoom call, and apparently she's just one of any number of people who are on a Disney call. And somehow or another, this call is circulating on social media. And so this is about a minute or so of her in her position of leadership at Disney explaining. Let me just take a step back. You know, Walt Disney, that Walt Disney, Mickey Mouse, Minnie Mouse, etc. Remember how it used to be really wholesome and it used to be family friendly and you could park your kids in front of a Disney movie and not have to worry about what they were going to see? Well, those days are gone. May I say to you, those days are gone. And if you need proof, here's some proof from her talking about the many, many, many LGBTQIA characters that they are just ramrodding into all the Disney fair these days. Listen to her.
I'm here as a mother of two queer children, actually, one transgender child and one pansexual child, and also as a leader. And that was the thing that really got me, because I have heard so much from so many of my colleagues over the course of the last couple of weeks, in open forums and through emails and phone conversations. And I feel a responsibility to speak, not just for myself, but for them, to all of us. We had an open forum last week at 20th where, again, the home of really incredible, groundbreaking LGBTQIA stories over the years, where one of our execs stood up and said, you know, we only have a handful of queer leads in our content. And I went, what? That can't be true. And I realized, oh, it actually is true. We have many, many, many LGBTQIA characters in our stories. And yet we don't have enough leads and narratives in which gay characters just get to be characters and not have to be about gay stories. And so that's been very eye-opening for me. And I can tell you it's something that I feel perhaps had this moment not happened, I, as a leader, and me as my colleagues, would not have focused on. And going forward, I certainly will be more so. I know that we will be. And I hope this is a moment where, the 50% of the tears, sorry, are coming. We just don't allow each other to go backwards.
How do you define backwards? You know, you heard the bit about many, there are many, many, many LGBTQI. I can't even keep up with it. Now it almost sounds like, LGBTQIA, EIEIO. It's almost getting to that point now. Everybody, LGBTQIA, EIEIO. I don't know. I mean, how many letters will be tagged onto this? I suppose it's endless. So we're going to get a link to that posted so that you can see it for yourself. And then the second one that we have is, now, Mariana, you're going to need to jump on the microphone now and tell and kind of set this one up for me, who exactly is speaking in the second Disney audio.
For sure. This one is an executive producer of Disney called LaToya Raveno. It looks like she's, that's how you pronounce her name. Mm-hmm. And what she's doing is she's talking about kind of how when she came into Disney.
You don't have to tell us what she says, but mm-hmm. just who is it that's talking?
Sure. She's an executive producer for Disney, who's been
great.
Adding this stuff subtly into the programming.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Mariano. So let's play this audio from this other lady who's working at Disney.
Content. I grew up watching, you know, all of the classics. They have been a huge, like, informative part of my life. But at the same time, like, I worked at small studios most of my career, and I'd heard, you know, hear whispers. Like, I'd heard things like, oh, you know, they won't let you show this at a Disney show. And I'm like, okay. So I was a little, like, sus when I started. But then my experience was bafflingly the opposite of what I had heard. On my little pocket of, like, you know, proud family Disney TVA, the showrunners were super welcoming. Meredith Roberts and, like, our leadership over there has been so welcoming to, like, my, like, not at all secret gay agenda. And so, like, I feel like I felt like it was, I mean, like, maybe it was that way in the past, but I guess, like, something must have happened in the last, like they're turning it around, they're going hard. And then all that, like, momentum that I felt, like, that sense of I don't have to be afraid to, like, let's have these two characters kiss, let's in the background, this, like, I was just wherever I could, just basically adding queerness to, like, if you see anything queer in the show, I'm proud of them. But, like, I just was like, no one would stop me and no one was trying to stop me.
All right. So, I mean, this really doesn't require any further commentary of mine. Just be aware that these people are working in positions of power and influence in places like Disney. And if your children are consuming this fare, and most of them are, this is what's going on behind the scenes. Just FYI, that's all. It's a public service announcement. You are what you eat, after all. Would you let your kids eat, you know, junk food or stuff that's got weird dyes in it or chemicals or things that you don't know how it's going to affect them, much less things that you know are bad for them? Would you let your kids eat that kind of food? Of course not. So just ask yourself, which is more important in the big picture, what goes into the body or what goes into the soul? Both are important. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that, you know, it's not important what food your kids eat. It is, certainly, for their bodily health, but their spiritual health is every bit as important, if not more so, from an eternal standpoint. So if you've wondered, parents, if you've wondered, why all of a sudden, after homeschooling my kid, after going to Mass every Sunday, altar boys, whatever else you may have done to raise your children, and God bless you for doing it. God bless you. And God will bless you for doing that. And if you've asked yourself, what on earth happened? I got a high schooler now who thinks she's trans. I've got a son in college who's just come out as gay. Now, I'm not saying that Disney is the sole reason to blame, but it certainly, I mean, you just heard some of these executives saying to you, of course, they weren't telling you this. They didn't think you would know this because that Zoom call was not intended to go public, I guess. The people on Twitter like Christopher Rufo and others have it, investigative journalism, I suppose. I'm not entirely sure, but I'm pretty sure that they probably wouldn't have been as glib about this and as smug as they were if they knew that you, Mr. American Mom and Dad, might be hearing what they had to say. But if you've wondered, why is this happening to my children? It could be in part, perhaps, maybe, and probably, the movies they've been watching. Nancy and I went to watch, we didn't go anywhere. We didn't go to a theater, but we watched most of it. I just got tired of it and couldn't take it anymore. I think we probably watched over half of it. But we watched this very beautifully rendered movie called Encanto. Have you seen this? It's kind of, how can I describe it? It's like Mexican-American, or at least, I mean, they're speaking English, so Mexican-American, but it's probably more set in maybe the old country. A lot of, you know, beautiful scenery, extremely well, I mean, technically brilliant, kind of like the Pixar type of movies, you know, technically beautiful, beautiful sets, lavish songs, song and dance. The whole thing basically is you've got this girl, she appears to be maybe 14, 15 years old, and she lives in a house, in a family that is all about magic. And if you don't watch it with a critical eye, you might think that the magic is sort of a stand-in, or maybe a watered-down version of their Catholic faith, because there are certain signs and symbols in this that could give you that sort of warm and fuzzy feeling that this is really, they're saying magic, but what they really mean is God. They don't mean God. They don't mean God. They don't mean sanctifying grace. They don't mean any of those things, but they have superimposed this sort of more traditional type of family with the abuela, and there's a deceased abuelo and the girl, and she's trying to find what is her particular magic, and you know, what magic can she do? And so, I mean, it's magic front and center, but even that's not the most objectionable thing. But it's the way they weave into it some of these subtle characters. So for example, one of the characters, and this is not very subtle, and I forget her name, but she's basically a man who's a woman. So it's a woman, it's a female character ostensibly, but she's a linebacker. I mean, she looks like a man. She's got big brawny arms. She's like a Leah Thomas or Thompson, you know, that dude that's stealing all of the awards from the women swimmers in collegiate sports because he's presenting himself as a woman. He towers over them. He's much bigger, much faster, much stronger than the women that he's competing against because he's not a woman. But of course, if you say that publicly, people will destroy you. He's a man. And he puts on a one piece and he gets in the pool with his bathing cap and he breaks all the records because he's physically bigger than the women. It's kind of like that kind of a character. So the magic stuff, I found that very tiresome. And then the whole thing with this character, and there's some others, but that's the one that really sort of stands out the most. You can't help but notice it because it's a female character, but it's a man. It's a big, strapping linebacker dude. What message is that intended to send? Now, I know some people might say, well, really, I mean, in life, there are some women who are, you know, bigger and more, you know, perhaps having some masculine characteristics, whatever. I mean, that's true. I don't dispute that. But that's not this. This is not that. It's really clear that this important character in the movie is intended to, I'll put it this way, I believe it's intended to make this seem normal for your kids. So it's like if they grow up watching movies that have these characters, many of whom are very likable, they're very, you know, very sympathetic, and you like them and you care about them to the extent you can care about a fictional character. And if your children have had a steady diet of that, and you just heard the Disney people saying, we have lots and lots and lots and lots of gay characters and queer characters and all these things, but how come we don't have more queer leads? Come on, how can this be the case? We got to get more queer leads in there. By the way, you're probably not allowed to say queer because they'll say that you're homophobic if you say that. I'm only saying it because they say it. I'm trying to use the terminology that they use. But my point is simply this. And I guess I'm being repetitive, but I think it bears repeating. If, as you look back and you try to piece together what happened along the way that might have led your daughter to thinking that she's trans, or your son or daughter for that matter to think, well, maybe I am gay, look to what they watched. Look to see, did they have a steady diet of these Disney films? Now, if your children are still young enough, and by all means, I would encourage you as parents, be vigilant and watch the movies first, maybe. I know you may say, I don't have time to do that. I got stuff to do. And I just put the kids in front of the Disney movie and I think everything will be okay. Well, okay. But you just heard what the Disney executives had to say on this issue. They're intentionally doing this because they want to normalize it, and they want your kids to think of this as normal and maybe even desirable. I'll leave it at that. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Laura in Chicago. Hi, Laura.
Good morning, Patrick. How are you?
I'm well, thanks.
So I was just telling your the person that picked up my call about the movie Encanto. I just wanted to make a comment. As soon as I heard you on the radio, I said, I'm sorry, Patrick, but you are wrong. So this movie is...
Wrong about what? What was I wrong about?
Well, the setting is supposed to be in Colombia. When you look at the beginning opening scenes, you'll see that I'm Colombian, so that's why I'm telling you. Mm-hmm. When you look at the opening scenes, there's a couple like things that they will show, very typical of Colombia. There's a sign that says, you know, Colombia, and
that would be a good
the hint. Colors of it and everything.
Right there, that's a good giveaway. Yeah. Okay, well, I stand corrected. I think what I said was it's from the old country. Might have been Mexico, but fair enough. So let's say it's Colombia. I certainly won't argue that point.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, well, yeah, you know, like South America, it's a little different. But anyway, so it is also based on, or I guess it gets a lot of its ideas from a book that was very famous years ago by a very well-known Colombian author. His name is Gabriel Garcia Marquez, and he talks a lot. The book is called 100 Years of Solitude, and he talks a lot about this like magic that happens in his area where he was from. From what I heard, though, he was believed to be a Freemason. Now, this I don't know for sure, but those are things that I've heard. Okay. Things that I'm just commenting on it, right? So there's a lot of things that are going in our media and our culture nowadays that we're not even aware of. And my parents and I, we watched the movie just because like we kind of wanted to see how they would portray our country. And they did fairly okay. Again, I agree with you. The storyline wasn't like to my liking, but the graphic itself, just the way they made it, it was a beautiful movie, wasn't it?
And the music was very catchy. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you have actually Colombian artists. Some of the Colombian artists are the ones that produce that music. But the message itself maybe was not necessarily the best. So right. Just wanted to make a comment on that.
No, I'm glad you did. I mean, I realized that when it comes to things like entertainment, people will react differently to it. And I was more bored with it than anything else. I got about halfway through with it. And I realize it's a movie for children primarily. But as I watched it, I began to see some things that to me seemed very subtle, but very intentional. Like the one character. Do you remember the name of that character? The woman, the girl woman who looked like a man. I don't remember who that was, but she was like one of the daughters or one of the cousins or something.
Oh, yeah, it was the sister. I cannot remember her name.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. Did that jump out at you when you saw that? Did that seem odd to you that she was a female character but so obviously male?
Yes and no. It's actually based on, she's a weightlifter in Colombia. It's a famous weightlifter. I can't remember her name. But if you see her picture, then you would be able to know. I can't remember her name right now, but she did look way more masculine than the actual person that is based on.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, Laura, thank you. I'm really glad you were able to contribute to the conversation. And I presume you've been here in the U.S. for a while, right? Your English is excellent.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've been here more than I lived in Colombia, so.
Okay. Well, thank you. Gracias. And hope we'll talk again. Thanks, Laura. Quick time out. We'll be right back with more of your phone calls, 888-914-9149. John Stewart, he was talking all about systemic racism and white fragility and how much he's against white extremism. Well, he had a guest on who basically took him apart like a cheap watch. I'll share with you what happened on the other side of this quick timeout. Plus your phone calls, 888-914-9149. Call me now. I'll be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Come a little bit closer. Great song. If you're unfamiliar with it, it's called Harvest Moon. Neil Young, really good song. Check it out sometime. But we have work to do. So before I go to the phones, and those of you holding, thank you for your patience. I just want to share with you, this is an article in the Daily Wire. Jon Stewart, you know, the guy from the comedy show, he had some guests on his program, and they had to listen to him give an anti-white extremism rant against racist systems in America. During the latest episode on Apple TV's The Problem with Jon Stewart, Stewart went out of his way to claim that white supremacy is rampant in America and suggested that there are, quote, racist systems in place here that prove, quote, America has always prioritized white comfort over black survival. He said black people have had to fight so hard for equality that they've been irreparably set back in the pursuit of equity. You notice the word irreparably, meaning that you can't fix it. That's false. It's absolutely false. It's patently, obviously false. But this is the rhetoric of the left. Stewart says he posed in front of a backdrop that changed the show's name from The Problem with Jon Stewart to The Problem with White People. I'm going to pause there for a second. The Problem with White People. What if they had changed the sign to say The Problem with Brown People? Would that be okay? Absolutely not, because that would be what? Let's fill in the blank together. That would be racism. That would be racism. And I'll say it a million times. I've said it a million times. I'll say it a million more times, that racism is always wrong, regardless of the skin color of the person who is perpetrating racism. Racism is reprehensible and wrong and must always be opposed. So what he did and what his producers did and whoever else was involved in that, in turning this sign from saying The Problem with Jon Stewart, which actually is a very appropriate sign, if you ask me, to The Problem with White People, it's this age-old example of people who style themselves as anti-racist, but all they're really doing is engaging in racism under the disguise of being anti-racist. So let me continue. Stewart said, any real attempt to repair a ton of that damage, reparation, sets off white people's, they're coming for our blank alarm, which we would know ourselves had we actually been listening. Two other people on the panel, whose names don't matter, agreed wholeheartedly with his assessment. But when they threw it to the other guest, Andrew Sullivan, he's gay, by the way, and he is a political commentator, when they went to him, and he pointed out that he is an immigrant to this country and he didn't agree with the claim that America is a white supremacist place. He says, well, I don't believe that. So after Jon Stewart got done with his rant, Andrew Sullivan says, I don't believe that. I think it is possibly the most absurd hyperbole I've ever heard. I can tell you America in 2022 is the most multiracial, multicultural, tolerant, diverse melting pot that has ever existed on the planet Earth. He said, and there is no other place on earth even like it. That's why, now check this out. This was a very telling comment. He says, that's why 86% of our immigrants to the United States are non-white. 86% of immigrants to the United States are non-white. And he said, do you think that they want to come into a white supremacist country? Ponder that for a minute. If this country really were as irreparably, to use Jon Stewart's word, as irreparably a white supremacist country as the critical race theory people would have you believe, then why is it that this horribly white supremacist country sees 86% of its immigrants coming in being non-white. Explain that to me. Riddle me this. If it were really rigged against non-white people, and it's not, if it really were rigged against non-white people, then how do you explain the 86% of immigrants coming in who are non-white? He also says, do you think they want to come into a white supremacist country? So once again, this fantasy that the whole system is rigged against black people, tell that to Barack Obama. Tell that to the current Secretary of Defense. Tell that to, I mean, don't even get me started. Sports, entertainment, politics, academia, all the major systems in this country are very well represented by minority people. Very well represented. So when people talk about systemic racism, which system are you referring to? Now, they actually did get into that. Sullivan explained further. He says that for most people, the term white supremacy means the KKK. It means no rights for minorities. And this has been used simply to avoid an argument. Later, Sullivan reminded Stewart that America also has a great history. He said that by calling today white supremacy, and this is another very good point. He says if everything you don't like because it's conservative or whatever, if everything you don't like is white supremacy, he says, then you're really minimizing actual white supremacy. You're trivializing actual white supremacy and intolerance and racism on the part of white people against black people and others. And he's right about that. He says, you, being the United States, you have incredible diversity. To condemn all American history as racist, he says, but in fact, American history has been liberating. He said, the systems that were put in place, according to John Stewart anyway, the systems that were put into place were racist. So Sullivan said, give me an example of what these systems are. And John Stewart said, housing and the GI Bill. And I don't even know how he can say that because the laws on the books make it stringent, at least from a legal standpoint. There are, I'm sure, people who get away with it. They finagle things and they try to, you know, maybe avoid selling or renting to a black person, to use an example, but at least the system itself, some people know how to game the system. Let's put it that way. People who cheat on their taxes are gaming the system. People who jump turnstiles in subways are gaming the system. So it doesn't mean that there aren't people who will not do these things. There always seem to be those people. But the system itself is not rigged against black people. So he brought that up. I mean, he brought up in the GI Bill. I mean, come on. How is that rigged against black people? I have a son who's benefited greatly from the GI Bill from his 10 years in the Navy as a nuclear engineer. But that's beside the point. So Sullivan said, you know, give me some other examples. And John Stewart couldn't give any more examples. He couldn't come up with anything. And so Sullivan said, I think you're not living on the planet most Americans are, which is why this kind of extremism, this anti-white extremism, is losing popular support. And I think he's right. I mean, there are plenty that I would disagree with Andrew Sullivan on, but on this point, I think he's absolutely right. 888-914-9149. And one more time, just make sure everybody understands, I absolutely condemn racism. It's heinous. It's sinful. We should always oppose it. But at least I'm consistent, unlike people like John Stewart. I'm consistent because I maintain, and always will, that regardless of the skin color of the person perpetrating racism, it's still wrong and should still be opposed. And I absolutely reject this false narrative that is constantly being put forth by the virtue signalers. Talk about a dog whistle. Man, the left loves this dog whistle, and they react to it instantaneously. This masquerade of being quote-unquote anti-racist by actually being racist. It doesn't work that way. Not in the real world, anyway. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Lucy in San Antonio, Texas. Good morning, Lucy.
Patrick Madrid, this is Lucy from San Antonio, Texas, and I talked to you several times. One time during the pledge drive, and you wanted to know what kind of coffee I was drinking. Still drinking the same coffee. Patrick, I've got a question for you. And like the one that you love. It's a very simple question. short. It's very simple, very short. How often can you go to confession?
Okay. As often as you need to. And if you went, say, once a day, you probably wouldn't need to do that unless you're a horrible sinner, and I doubt you are. But if you had to go once a day, if you went to confession in the morning and you fell into mortal sin at lunchtime, you could go to confession again later in the day. There's no limit.
Oh, wonderful. Perfect. Okay.
But I have a hard time imagining that you, with all that great coffee in you, that you would be having to go to confession that often.
Patrick, I got to talk to you about something very serious, and you've got to listen. You, John Morales, Glenn, Josh, Kale, Drew, it wasn't subliminal, but every day I hear this soft voice about confession. And I want to tell the 10 or 15 people that are listening to your program, I, Lucy, pray like
I don't
Catholic,
think there are that many, but go ahead, Lucy. Sorry.
Yeah, there might be six. Let's go with half a dozen.
Okay.
Patrick, I'm telling you, I went to confession last night, and I've been battling. It's 2 miles from my house. I've been trying to go in 6 months. And, oh, Lucy, you say the rosary every day. You listen to Relevant Radio. You go to Mass at noon, the repeat at night, the chaplet. Oh, yeah, I guess I don't need to go. No, I needed to go. And the first thing I did, I didn't go with my spouse because there was just such a situation there. And I kept saying, well, I'll wait till he goes with me. And finally, the Lord, anyway, I went. I didn't even make it in the church, and I started crying. I walked in, and I felt like, now I'm the one that's had the 4 heart attacks and been in the hospital 11 times in 12 years, and I feel amazing. I don't even want to know what's wrong with me anymore. I don't listen to the words. Patrick, I felt like somebody had wrapped their arms around me, and the first person I saw was Ambrose and Daniel. He's a deacon, and I said something about, I was told I didn't need to go, and he said, God would never tell you to stay away from God. Anyway, I went, and I was scared, and these two women, Deborah, I got to have a shout-out to Deborah and Donna, and they said, Lucy, we'll walk up there with you. I was crying the whole time, and the priest, I'd never met him. He was our new pastor. It was amazing. My point, question, statement is, please, I am begging you from the bottom of my heart, everyone out there for Lent, go to confession. I don't care if it's been 45 years. I don't care if it's been 60. Get in there. I felt like I was crawling. I mean, I hadn't killed anybody. I wasn't a murderer, but it was just so hard for me, so hard for me to...
How did you feel, Lucy, when you walked out of the confessional? So you were in tears. I imagine the joy was starting there. But when the confession was done and you walked out, how did you feel? Not sure if we still have Lucy. I'm hoping we still have. I can see you, Lucy. I just don't know if your phone line is cooperating. And it looks like her phone, yeah, cell signal problem. So sorry about that, Lucy, but I'm overjoyed to hear that you had that wonderful experience. And thanks for taking a moment to share that with us. Yeah, sometimes the cell signal drops. We're going to come back to your phone calls. The number is 888-914-9149. You can call now. We had a line, unfortunately, it just opened up. I think her cell signal dropped, but you can grab it, 888-914-9149. I will be right back right after this.
Real life solutions you can believe in. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and RelevantRadio.com.
Okay, man, does the time go by fast. Let's get now to, let's go to John in North Riverside, Illinois. Good morning, John. How old are you?
7.
Welcome aboard, John. Nice to talk to you.
Do angels have feelings?
No, they don't have feelings like you and I do. You and I have emotions. I'm sure you've heard that term before, right? Emotions. And emotions are things that we can't control. They are feelings that come over us. Sometimes you might feel sad, or you might feel lonely, or you might feel really happy, or you might feel scared. You've felt all those things before, right, John?
Yeah.
Right. So angels don't feel any of those things. They don't have emotions the way human beings do. Now, they experience joy, seeing God face to face. They experience delight. I mean, there are experiences they have, but they're not really emotions like we have emotions or feelings. You know, your feelings are like the weather, and the weather will change. So if it's stormy out, eventually the sunshine will come back. And when it's sunny, eventually there will be rain. That's how it is for us as human beings, is that the emotions come and go, and we don't really control them. They're just there. But angels don't have those feelings. They don't get sad. They don't get lonely. They don't get angry. They don't get afraid or any of those things, because they see God face to face. Does that make sense? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
You're a smart
now
young man.
Now we get it a lot.
Yeah. Do you listen to the Patrick Madrid show?
Kind of.
Well, good. And nope. Hopefully the
no
older
offense.
You get.
No offense. I want spring break.
None taken. None at all. And I guess your dad let you give me a call today. Is that right?
Yeah.
Please say thank you to him. Hey, John, have you made your first Holy Communion yet?
No, I'm having it this year. I'm still in first grade.
That is really good. I'm really happy for you. You're going to really love it when you receive Jesus in first Holy Communion. You're probably studying all about that right now, aren't you?
Nope.
No.
I'm on spring break. I already told you I'm on my spring break.
That's right. You're a man of leisure. What was I thinking? You're taking it easy right now.
Yeah.
Good for you. Well, John, thanks for calling the show. Out of the mouths of babes. Isn't that what Jesus said? Thanks, John. Let's go to Jose now in Phoenix. Hi, Jose.
Hi, Patrick. Good morning. I have a quick question regarding natural family planning. I was talking to a priest recently about NFP, and he mentioned in passing, it just stuck with me, that NFP requires grave matter in order to practice, and not that it can be a standard practice, so to speak. If you're practicing it without grave matter, it becomes mortally sinful. And my understanding was that
none of that is true, by the way. Yeah, none of that
is
true.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Mm-hmm. I figured that because my diocese here in Phoenix, it dedicates a lot of resources to training marriage prep couples in natural family planning. I'm like, it just seems very odd that you would spend that amount of resources and it would be something that requires grave matter. So I just wanted some clarity on that.
Sure. Well, let's start, first of all, with NFP for those who've heard it, but they're not entirely sure what it is. Now, I know you know what it is, but NFP is the scientific method of avoiding conception by using observation methods to chart, typically, or, you know, there would be a chart, a paper chart, where you could, using observation over the course, let's say, of a month, 2 months, 3 months, you get a sense of the woman's monthly cycle, which includes each month ovulation. And ovulation is the fertile time of the month. So through this method, which is short for natural family planning, the couple can arrive at a great level of certitude that during this particular time of that month, this is when the likelihood of conception is the highest. And so if they have, and there's the language that's used, for example, by Pope Paul VI in Humanae Vitae, where he refers to this, and you probably know this, Jose, he doesn't say you have to have a grave reason. I'd need to go back and reread the statement that he has on this, but it's a just reason. You have to have a sufficient reason to do this. And there are many examples of that. It could be the health of the mother. It could be difficult finances. It could be a war. So if you're in Ukraine right now and Russia is driving tanks through your house, you may say, we have a just reason to postpone having children, for a time anyway. There's nothing whatsoever sinful about it. And the people who are always tub-thumping and hooping and hollering about how NFP is sinful, they're just simply wrong. They're not representing what the church teaches on this issue. It is permissible, and we can appeal directly to God himself because God himself created the woman's cycle this way. And so to understand how the cycle works and to refrain from using something that is good and proper to marriage, keeping in mind that the husband and the wife have a right to this benefit of marriage. They have a right to this pleasure. It's established by God for them. So it's something good and intended for them. And if they choose because of finances or health or some other reason that at this moment they, in their prudential judgment, don't think having another child would be helpful, they have absolute right to refrain from doing something good. Now, this is different from using contraception, because in the case of contraception, whether it's a barrier or a chemical or perhaps even an action that could prevent the transmission of life, that's bad and that's seriously sinful because it is making use of the good thing, but it is making use of it in an illicit way that distorts and forecloses on the possibility of human life being transmitted. And I'm speaking in generalities for obvious reasons. So those who are confused on this point, in some cases, are confused because they are conflating the serious sin of birth control, the serious sin of contraception in whatever form, with the entirely licit abstention from making use of a good thing in a way that's similar to fasting. You can fast from food. St. Paul himself said that from time to time, it's good for married couples to not engage in the marital act, you know, be apart for a while for prayer, etc. So, you know, if this is sinful, St. Paul is guilty of telling married couples to do something sinful, and it's not sinful. So I wish that this notion that makes the rounds every so often would just simply go away. But unfortunately, there are those who continue to traffic in this erroneous idea that using NFP is sinful. Now, the final point, Jose, and I'll throw it back to you. It is certainly possible that one could develop a contraceptive mentality, that's a term that's often used, if you were to use NFP always and never have any intention whatsoever of letting God bless you with children. That would frustrate the primary end of marriage. The primary goal or end of marriage is procreation. God does not intend procreation for every married couple, but for most couples he does. And so it could stray into sinful territory, but the vast majority, 99 out of 100, or probably much more than that, of couples who are using NFP are not doing it in a sinful or contraceptive way. They're doing it because at this point in time, having a baby would not be the right thing in their judgment. So I hope that clarifies it. Anything you want to add to that, Jose?
Yeah, no, that's actually the same point I wanted to touch on, because I've heard it mentioned before, you know, and that was actually the priest's point where he said when practicing NFP, the procreative and unitive aspects of this act get separated, and that just didn't vibe with me. So that was exactly the same question I was going to ask, you know.
Yeah, it's an absolute no on that. He's misunderstanding this, because you can't separate the procreative and the unitive if you don't engage in the act. That's the whole point. NFP is you refrain from the act that leads to procreation. So you can't separate the procreative and the unitive if you refrain from the act itself. It's like fasting from food. The analogy, if this is helpful, Jose, the analogy would be if you ate the food just for the pleasure of it. And let's face it, food is pleasurable. So if you ate the food just for the pleasure, and then you went next door and you barfed it all up again and bellied back up to the dinner table and had some more food just for the pleasure of it, you would be divorcing the pleasure of the food with the nutrition of the food. It would be a needing disorder, and that would be wrong. So there's a kind of parallel there between that and using NFP. NFP is like fasting. You're just saying, I'm not going to eat right now. I'll eat later, but I'm not going to eat right now.
I understand. That's very helpful. Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome. It just is one of those things where I don't understand why some people in their beady-eyed stubbornness, they won't let go of this error, and they confuse people in the process. So I'm hopeful that maybe what I'm talking about here will help clarify it for people who might have been confused. Thanks, Jose. Appreciate it. 888-914-9149. How about Bob now in Youngstown, Ohio? Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
Hello, Bob.
Yes. Hello.
You're on the air, sir. Please proceed.
I was listening to your program the other day, and someone that was leading the, it was a female, she was talking about death, and the caller came on and asked if she would see her family in heaven, and the commentator said, no, you won't see your children, you won't see your lover, you won't see your neighbors, you won't see your parents, you won't see your grandparents. Because it's such a euphoric place in God's presence that you don't need to see any of those people. But that's all behind you. What do you think?
Oh, I disagree. I don't know if that was a guest or who that was. I didn't hear it. So I can't critique what I didn't hear. But just from what you're saying, no, that's not true. The blessed in heaven do know each other. They see each other. They know each other. And they rejoice together in the presence of God.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Maybe switch to another station and heard that.
Yeah,
couldn't swear to it.
Well, I mean, you know, it could have been a guest. I don't know. I didn't hear it, but I've never ever heard any of the hosts here at Relevant Radio suggest such a thing. So I'm guessing if it happened on Relevant Radio, chances are it was a caller, maybe, or maybe a guest, but I don't know.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. I appreciate your call. 888-914-9149 is the number. Now, we have a break coming here in just a few minutes, and we will be coming back with hour three in just a few minutes, but if you're getting a busy signal, just because, as it often happens, the phones are very busy right now, just hit redial. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to me by going to the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick, and just click on where it says contact, and there you'll see where you can send me an email. And it comes directly to me, and I look forward to it, and I maybe will even be able to read it on the air. So there's that waiting for you. Also, if you want to send me a message on Twitter, I do keep an eye on my Twitter feed throughout the program, and my address there is @PatrickMadrid. You can find me there and send me a message if you're interested. I did have one message that came in earlier. I was talking about the story of the priest who baptized me, and Ann Walter, a listener, she says, your story of hunting for your baptismal certificate and the priest who baptized you gave me holy chills. Amazing how some significant people in one's life or people will never know while on earth. I bet a lot of folks will be searching for their priest today. That's a good point, Anne. Well, I'm glad you've got holy chills. I thought it was really neat to, after all these years, discover the priest who baptized me. I put his picture and his obituary on my Twitter feed for those who are interested in seeing it. May he rest in peace. I'll be coming right back right after this.